and we will sign up on the 24th of December 2020. OPSM was presented by the Minister in 2021. Now, Chair, I think it's critical for me to just kind of indicate why we feel that this is a very strategic a document. Chair, if you check on the OPSM, where we previously had occupational certificates from levels 1 to 8, we now have new suites of qualifications. If I can just look at level 6, you can see on the higher certificate, which SQSF, sorry, which is the black, there's a diploma and an advanced certificate, and we have an occupational diploma and an advanced occupational certificate. Now, Chair, this is going to have major implications for the system going forward. Before I get to that, Chair, let me just first slide this slide that also brings in some essential elements here that we would like you to view this as a ladder or a stacking system from NQF level 1 to NQF level 8. And the learners in the system can exit at any point in two employments. On the right-hand side, you can see tests maybe to articulation or other sub-frameworks. It could take you to employment or self-employment or to further studies. And I think we are actually hitting three targets there for the one. These within daily qualifications, you could have part qualifications and skills programs. Within that framework, you have the full qualifications, a qualification at level 1 could also have some part qualifications as well as these programs within that. So, you know, PCT is already moving into an area which is nationally called micro-credentialing, which is now the international trend. We are already moving into that space. Here's the important thing, the implication of the revised OPSM and what we are trying to achieve with that as a TCTO is the following. We want to promote and contribute to a single national coordinated NQF, which I think is high on everybody's agenda. Secondly, for us, Chair, this is parity of a scheme between the OQSF, the SEQSF, and the General and Further Qualification Sub-Table by virtue of the qualification nomenclature. Chair, I need to indicate that it's not only about the nomenclature, but it's about ensuring that the qualifications meet the requirements for such. A big emphasis, Chair, is on elevating TVET colleges to become institutions of choice. We believe that if TVET colleges can start to offer those qualifications that we are now proposing at levels 5 and 6, we would be fixing up a huge problem in the country where universities can only accept up to 200,000 to 250,000 candidates. Those who have certificate and diploma entry cannot go anywhere else. We believe the OPSF opens up that space. We also want for highly educated institutions to offer our qualifications, and we are very focused on CET colleges offering skills programs. So hopefully when we arrive here to present our annual report, you will see the successes of this particular effort. So this is just the articles. I'm not going to go into this. In terms of our strategic imperatives, Chairperson has already went over this. How we're going to measure our performance, Chair, is outcome one, as I said, maintaining a single national quality field occupation sub-framework. Two, we ensure the development of and quality assurance of occupational qualifications that are responsive to labor market needs. And three, Chair, we need to create TCTO that is a responsive learning organization, and that's critical, internally as well as externally. Internally, we need the right people with the right set of skills that we can keep pace with the rapid change in technology. On the outside, we need to be aware of how the international plans and position to still have that learning. So, Chair, what's currently happening is that SEPO is managing to suspend. The red arrow indicates the proposed historical or unit standard-based qualifications, which we are decreasing. And they need to be, in terms of the determination, they have an end date of June this year, with last enrollments of June 2024, and then a teach-out period. And here, at the same time, we are taking the historical qualifications that still have relevance. We are upgrading them to on-facial qualifications or past qualifications, so that when we come back here in next year or two, we should not have this kind of slide. By then, all of the historical and human standard qualifications ought to have qualification. Chair, in terms of outcomes, I'm not going to go into detail with that, except to say that our outcome one obviously is the single national quality framework that promotes synergy, simplification, and effectiveness. And I think the word simplification for us is something that we're really driving at to simplify the process. Chair, I'm not going to go through the rest of the details because it just indicates how we're going to measure that particular action. In terms of outcome two, Chair, again, it's to ensure that the development of quality assurance of occupational qualifications. Without going into the detail, Chair, what we're measuring here is the percentage of occupational qualifications that we develop as per the economic recovery skills strategy. We're going to measure the number of occupational qualifications that are taken up at institutions, and then we are also going to look at the number of institutions that are taking up occupational qualifications. When I talk about institutions, I'm talking about private skills development providers, public private colleges, public community colleges, and airport IAEA. So we measure two things under that outcome, the number of qualifications taken up, and secondly, the number of institutions taking them. And Chair, the rest are just broken up. I think I'll just summarize that in what I was just indicated. In terms of the TCG being a responsive learning organization, I made some remarks in that regard a bit earlier. In terms of our annual performance plan, very quickly, Chair, we have four programs. The first one is administration. There we'll be looking at our issues of capacity building, marketing and communication, our master assistance plan, as well as change management. We have, in total, indicators, 27 for the coming year. And Chair, you know, we've been on an upward trajectory in terms of our achievements on performance indicators. From 60, we went to 75, and then we were at 87, and hopefully by the end, when we report on this year, it's gone on to 220. So I hope to finish much higher than that. Chair, in terms of program one, I'm going to focus on that. I've just spoken about all of those program one issues. In terms of program two, very quickly, Chair, again, it's about qualifications that are recommended to SACWA, and the focus there is on quality assurance of the assessments. And you can see all of our measurements are in terms of percentages. So what we try to do, Chair, is to quality assure according to the TCTO standards all applications that are sent to the TCTO. In terms of 2.3, certification system is maintained. Again, Chair, you can see we set our targets at a percentage, with 95% of our targets, and we have consistently been achieving 100% against that. And then Program 3, Chair, talks about our accreditation. And now we're responsible to accredit providers to offer the occupational qualification. Again, we can measure ourselves by the percentage of these applicants that are processed within the turnaround time of 90 days. Program 3 continued is about the quality assurance of assessment process. So there's a distinction between the first one, where it's a quality assurance of the assessment, and yet the process is leading up to the assessment. Program 3, Chair, is establishing the total uptake of occupational qualification at the various institutions. Program 4 was a fledgling unit. I've got three staff members running some excellent work. Basically it's to carry out a critical research that's required by the TCTO Our target for this year is 3 research reports and 1 research bulletin, but you know, the unit can take much more work to get that. Okay, with your permission, I'm going to hand over to our new CFO, Mr. Patu. I can see that somebody has hit the floor from the other side. So he's also hit the Garal running chair, having assumed office on the 1st of April this year. So over to you.
Thanks, see you on YouTube. On the Italian side, I think Mr. Rebellion, we have three sources of education. The first group is grant funding. And the impact that we see Thank you. charge
online platform, you don't hear the CFO, so if I can ask the CFO to raise the
question.
Yes.
Which device is the sound coming from?
This.
That device. Which you need. I'm asking.
You can mute his own instructions. You can mute and I can unmute here, then you can put that.
Yeah, no, thank you so much, Chairperson. So, the overall expenditure will be the allocate the utilization of the entire 146.1 million for the 2023-24 financial year. I wanted to highlight in terms of the purchase of the building, which is on the about, spoken about, of which we have had engagements with the land for the owners of the building, of which there was an offer to purchase the building, which in total was 97 million rand, of which for the past 3 or so financial years, the QC2 has been rolling over the accumulated surplus and making appropriate applications to the National Treasury, building up the reserve or the surplus that will assist us towards the pitches of the building, of which National Treasury has been being very supportive to the cost and the entity, and has been approving those surpluses, of which in the 2021-22 financial year we had accumulated up to 26 million towards the purchase of the building, of which currently on the 2022-23 financial year, which is being being audited, will add additional suppliers that will also add on top of what we already have in purchasing the building. So our intention is that the balance will be financed through a bond, of which the Department of Higher Education has already made the application on our behalf to the National Treasury for the approval of financing portion, the funding of the remaining balance on the purchase of the 20 or the 70 million remaining, of which we anticipate that before the end of the quarter we should be receiving that approval, so that we can then move on with the finalization. In acquiring the building. So acquisition of this building, it will assist the entity financially. If you look at the bond that will be paying 928,000 on the quoted prices of the remaining balance, this will be the rental that we are currently paying of approximately 1.25 million. So almost we will see an immediate saving that the organization will get. And of course, as the chairperson of the board has indicated, that there is a portion which is currently leased by the British Embassy, of which continuing using that facility, that particular company also assist in bringing in more revenue to the entity. That will assist us in implementing our mandate. I will pause here for the chairperson to say a word.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think CEO and CFO have covered the major part of the presentation. Just want to reemphasize the issue of the benefits. One of the benefits for our own department is using the possibility to investigate the cost. And other related entities are going to be used.
Very much to the colleague from the QC2O. I'd like to hand over to Prof. Luana, William Sakwa, as well as Ms. Maria Starr, if you could just acknowledge the error on the agenda and apologies for that. So I would then hand over to Prof.
Thank you very much, Chair. Just to be clear, I really have got very little
observation. I think to be on the side at all.
Thank you very much. We are here from Sabwa and then also begins to well, here we are four of us from Sabwa. What I'm going to be doing is to introduce the members who are here, and I will come in at the end to complete it. We're here with the CEO of the Sabwa, Ms. Maria Starr, the CFO of the Sabwa, who you used to know as CFO of the CEO, and I also used to know as the CFO of Omanis. It's an innocent Google Sharma. And Dr. Yaken Matang, who is our strategic learning manager. I'll get over to them and I'll come back.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Chairperson and honorable members. We very much appreciate the opportunity. I'm going to go quickly into an overview of our strategic plan. And then hand over to the thing. So like the QCO, our mandate is derived and our strategic plan is positioned within the national legislation, in particular the NQF Act, but of course the national and departmental imperatives also colour strategic objectives that SACWA has. The objects of SACWA, essentially our mandate, apologies, I believe that they're not able to see it on the MS team, but then
we'll arrange for it to be set up.
Thank you, Chair. I'll then continue. Really, the reason for SACWA's existence in terms of the Act is to oversee the further development and implementation of our national qualifications framework. Previously, of course, it was to develop the national qualifications under SACWA. Now we continue to advance the objectives and its further development. And of course, crucially, we coordinate the three sub-frameworks of which the OQSS is one. And the coordination and articulation and working together of this integrated system is of particular importance. I won't go into our vision and mission, Chair, but I will just spend a few minutes talking to our five strategic outcomes. We will unpack this in later slides, but it's important to note that our five-year strategic plan is built around firstly, the outcome of a dynamic NQF that is responsive and supports the needs of changing needs of lifelong learners in our country. We have an outcome of visionary and influential leadership that drives a clear and evidence-based NQF. Everything we do is based on research and evidence. Because we have a wealth policy, we want a well-articulated quality assured qualifications and professional designations framework. And like the QCO, we also have a strategic outcome of ensuring that our staff is competent and capable and, of course, enabled to further develop the inclusion. Then our final outcome is stakeholders and role players who are aligned to deliver support. These five objectives and strategic outcomes, are, of course, aligned with DA priorities of expanded access, improved efficiency, and improved quality. In terms of this presentation, what we want to do is just show our progress against our five-year strategic plan targets. And so in our planning process, we really looked at how far have we come in the five-year period and where are the shortfalls that we need to focus on as we move in these last two financial years of the strategic plan. And really what this picture or diagram is showing that in total, we are already 50% achieved in terms of our five-year trajectory. We're on track with 44% of the five-year target, and there's just 6% that has not yet started. But of course, doing this exercise, I will now be focused on to implement before we get to the end of the five-year period. without spending too much time, again in the color coding, here we have the particular targets that were lagging in orange or amber, depending on how colorblind you are, and in there the one that we hadn't yet started. And essentially what we're doing then is focusing on these shortfalls to make sure that by the time we get to the end of the strategic plan period, we've covered the commitments that we made over the 5-year period. And so I won't go into these in too much detail, but to say we are still working on policies, we're still working on the implementation of the ADIS Convention and fulfilling the international, the global convention that has also been promulgated in March, which tablets on a great application. And of course, we are still loading our national learners records database with data. The next outcomes have already been fully achieved and are on track, and these really relate to the articulation and quality assurance system and some of the stabilization of our workforce. In terms of the last outcome, the stakeholders and role players were aligned to get deliver on the NQX here. We are working with, in the first instance, with CHE to develop a functional system, and there is some work being done. But are efficient in the administration of qualifications. Equally, we are identifying gaps in our data set to make sure that we have all the data submitted on to IMRP. And Chair, with that, I would like to hand over to Dr. Massal, who will take us through our annual
presentation. Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, Honourable Members. The presentation that follows reports on SACWA's plan performance for the fourth year of its current strategic plan. SACWA recognizes that there are multiple macro factors that impact its work. These range from global pandemics, macroeconomic trends, and the effects of climate change, such as the droughts in the Horn of Africa and other neighboring countries. This presentation, however, will highlight three issues that immediately impact on staff for sustainability and service delivery. They are the post-disruption reality, funding challenges, and automation. Staff finds itself in a post-disruption period in which it is contending with the loss of institutional memory and expertise. In response to this reality, SACWA is focusing on rebuilding a strong organizational culture and on having the right people in the right places throughout the organization. With regard to funding, SACWA received 63% of its budget from the fiscus and is obliged to raise the rest. This means that much of SACWA's attention and focus is on income generation, which draws its efforts away from its mandated functions. The current funding model therefore requires review, and the CFO will elaborate on this in his presentation. We'd also like to highlight the automation project that's currently underway, which focuses on improved service delivery through streamlining internal processes using a staggered approach, and the CFO will elaborate a little bit on this in his presentation as well. In terms of the ATP, SACWA has 5 programs and 24 targets for the 23-24 financial year. For the purposes of today's presentation, I'll go through the first slide in quite some detail and talk through the outputs and audited performance and as well as the targets. And in the subsequent slides, in the interest of time, I'll focus only on the targets and some key highlights. Program one supports the operations of SACWA. Its activities ensure SACWA's financial stability. It provides human resource support, performs the governance, risk, and mandatory reporting functions, promotes SACWA and the NQF through advocacy campaigns, and ensures that SACWA strategy is implemented. There are currently 31 positions filled in this program, and 4 are vacant. In terms of the performance information, the first output is national and international promotion of the South African NQF. The audited performance in the 21-22 financial year was the implementation of 2 initiatives to promote the South African NQF. And the 23-24 target is to identify and implement 2 initiatives to promote the South African NQF. SACWA is a member of TICEP, the Association of International Credential Evaluation Professionals, a global community in practice for evaluation to share and learn evaluation methodologies. SACWA is scheduled to provide a keynote address and presentation on the South African NQS and micro-credentials at the annual TICEP conference in October this year. The second output is sharing of national and international trends and best practices with stakeholders, the audited performance in 21-22 toward two initiatives to share best practice while we're identified and implemented, and the target for 23-24 is to identify and implement one initiative to share national and international best practices with stakeholders. In addition to international platforms, SACWA also shares best practice locally. In August of this year, SACWA is scheduled to present at the International Education Association South African Conference. The third output is the implementation of the ADIS Convention. The audited performance for 21-22 was the implementation of phase one of the refugee project. And the 23-24 target is to roll out the second phase of the refugee pilot project. And SACWA has been appointed as the implementation structure for the ADIS Convention. So from this slide on, I'll focus on the target. This is on. Yeah. On the target and any relevant time. But stay on. Part four is to report the effectiveness of the system of collaboration. Target six is to advance on NQF matters as required. And target eight is that every staff member has at least two learning interventions per year. Target nine is to review and continue to implement strategies to generate funds through alternate revenue streams. Target 10 is to get an unqualified audit opinion. Target 11 is to implement four online campaigns aimed at informing the public about NQF. We'd also like to highlight to the committee that SACWA hosted three roadshows in April and May this year. There was a lot of excitement on the ground around these events, and SACWA received good feedback at all three engagements. In addition to this, SACWA also recently launched a new revamped website that is modern and makes use of clever animations to reach and engage stakeholders. Target 12 is to ensure that the NQS MIS incorporating NLRD contains 23 million learners with achievements. On to Program 2. Program 2 is responsible for registering qualifications and part qualifications for recognizing professional bodies and registering professional designations. There are currently 12 positions filled in this program and only one vacant. In the 23-24 financial year, Program 2 has two targets. Target 13 is to register qualifications recommended by QC that meet all SACWA's criteria within 3 months of submission. SACWA would like to acknowledge that there have been challenges in this space. However, we're moving in the right direction. The previous 4 month turnaround time has been reduced to 3 months from beginning to end due to improved services over time, processes over time. Target 14 is to finalize a concept paper and commence the review of the policy and criteria for the registration of qualifications and part qualifications on the NQF if it's necessary. Program 3 comprises ICT and NQF MIS. ICT is responsible for ensuring effective ICT governance and aligned development of ICT infrastructure resources to support achievement of organizational objectives and business processes. The NQF MIS is responsible for maintaining and further developing SACWA's management information system as the critical national source of information for human resource and skill development in policy, infrastructure, and planning. All 12 positions are filled in this unit. Target 18B is to test and implement an end-to-end electronic system for the evaluation of foreign qualifications. Target 19 is to test and pilot a workload tracking system for qualification and part qualifications. And we've seen through these, obviously, that we continue to work on improving processes. Target 20 is to make the public information on the NQF MIS easily accessible for all stakeholders. Target 21 is to identify institutions with legacy data and propose arrangements to get legacy achievement data. SACWA was mandated to be the holder of the National Learning Database, but we continue to struggle with the completeness of the data. There are two reasons for this in large. The first is that institutions fail to load their data on time. Instead, the data gets compromised before coming to SACWA, but SACWA really needs to be getting it first in order to fulfill its mandate. In addition to this, many records remain in paper form at institutions across the country. This target attempts to address the challenges around legacy data. In order to meet Target 21A, Target 21B is to seek funding for the digitization of legacy achievement records. I think we can all agree that a complete NR strategy is in the best interest of the country. Target 22 is to ensure that QCs load learner achievement records on the NQF MIS. Target 23 is that all recognized professional bodies load professional designation achievements that meet the requirements on the NQF MIS. Target 24 is to update the register of misrepresented qualifications. Although the NQF is yet to become the amended NQF Act of 2019, is yet to be promulgated. SACWA is a member of GAIN, which is a global academic integrity network, a newly formed community that is taking action against contract fees. SACWA has introduced the CHB to this network with the aim of ensuring that the integrity of South African academic achievement. Okay. For program four is responsible for the verification of South African qualifications and evaluation of foreign qualifications. Evaluation of foreign qualifications within 60 working days. The verification of foreign qualifications is also a problem for SACWA because we tend to be relying on information from foreign institutions, and this extends our desired timeline. But while we wait for automation to take place, which we hope will remedy some of this, is that we've taken steps to mitigate these challenges. Verification requests received for verification of South African qualifications within 25 working days. Okay, so on to the last program, which is Program 5, Research. Search is responsible for conducting evidence-based research to track development and implementation of the NQF and to evaluate the impact of the NQF on people in South Africa. All five positions in this program have been filled. There are two targets as well for the 23-24 financial year, but there's a lot more research happening outside VTP. Research functions as a cross-cutting unit whose work supports several programs by providing a strong evidence base. In addition to this, Professor Lamana will talk about some of the work planned that is underpinned by research. In terms of the ATP target, Target 28 is to review one NQF policy, and Target 29 is to hold one SACWA QC engagement towards reporting on the implementation of one reviewed policy. Lastly, SACWA has six priorities in addition to the ATP targets and five-year priorities. They are the implementation of the automation project, awaiting for the implementation of the NQF Amendment Act 2019, which impacts on SACWA's mandate, continuing the implementation of the ADIS Convention, beginning the NQF review and review of the professional body function, continuing to strive towards financial stability, and a focus on renewed organizational culture. I'll stop here and hand over to the CFO to present the budget. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Good morning, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, and my former colleagues. Thank you very much for this opportunity. It's very difficult to be in the same room where some people will come from, but good. We met on a very collegial event. Thank you very much. I was going to touch on the budget, so I thought maybe we need to look at where the budget overview of SACWA, where it's coming from. So the SACWA financial environment has been unstable for the past 3 years, mainly due to a very bloated structure, which has heavily manual oriented, and also the effects of COVID-19 that restricted the adequate revenue generation. I think this committee chair is aware of the, obviously, because of this bloated structure, there was some retreatment of 100 people that had to happen. So this has resulted in that restructuring of the organization in line with financial reality, facing the organization as well as the need for a lean structure. There is, however, been some positive improvements in the operations of the organization as revenue has been increasing in the current financial year, just in the financial year. Also, the funding model, as Dr. Kepeng has said, of the organization is still not ideal, Chair and Honorable Members. Currently, it's 60% from the grant for National Treasury and 30% from all sources of revenue. What this means, Chair, is that the organization finds itself trying to operate. Trying to raise our entity. I do not want to obviously compare with other similar organizations of which I have knowledge of, where 2% only from own sources and 98% from. And so that would public entity. We focus on first the delivery rather than looking for funding and operating as a commercial entity. However, this is the reality that is there, and the organization has to find those kind of revenue sources. So that's the last point that I'm raising there. Going into the budget itself. So, to paint with this graph, paint the picture of where SACWA are in terms of revenue. If you see from 2018-19 was 123 million going up to 134. And then you look at 2020-21, that's where the major issues have been in SACWA, where the revenue had decreased drastically. And I think I would also, if you look at 2021-22, I would like to thank the department for supporting us and increasing the funding, to where it is. I think in the just ended unaudited figures, which is kind of a statement from the previous financial year. So this is the trajectory, financial trajectory of SACWA. And like I've mentioned, thanks to the department, because they also funded the automation project, which quite helped a lot in terms of the financial resources. Just a quick revenue, I'll concentrate on foreign value fees, which comes from foreign qualification valuation, 26 million. Verification fees, this is national verification. And Honorable Chair President, Honorable Members, this is the area where, as a public entity, we would wish to offer this kind of service free of charge, because we are verifying South African qualifications, and it's quite, I think the CEO feels about this, that we are charging for this service, Jefferson. If this can be funded, then we provide education for free. That would be really ideal as a public entity, because these are South African qualifications that we still have to charge so that we raise that revenue. So that verification team, there are informal engagements that are going to happen, obviously with the with the department and the way we're approaching them, if that can be funded, then we can do that for free. Of course, we can, that was almost 15 million. Then we got income from professional bodies, I think 6.6 million. We got interest almost 4 million that, you know, we invest with the Reserve Bank and some funds of income. That gives us a budget of 141, almost 142 million for the year that is going to fund all those activities. So moving on, so we have really classified in terms of compensation, we are on page 1 million, goods and services, 48 million, capital expenditure, 12 million. So, compensation cost being adjusted to accommodate the new organizational structure, obviously, five opportunities with regards to 5-6 wage negotiation, we have made adequate provision for the increment of and there's a maintenance amount of work. Of course, I know this one is a 17-story building, but we do have an old building that needs a lot of money. In terms of goods and services, we have adjusted to reflect key spending priorities, notably things like conference support, advertisement, research and development, educational assistance, and staff training and workshops, which has been taken out of the budget previously, obviously, because of the condition. So this is where the organization is focusing on in terms of this expenditure. What are the key points going forward? We have seen that the major cost drivers for SACWA for the next 3 years will be compensation of employees, ICT, and office potential there is we need to convey the facility. So we have to just be accommodating to have that. But those are conversations that we're going to make in the negotiating our colleagues there to share the idea they are short for some money, we can share the building and buy it together. And then possible, we can have our own sort of campus. There's nothing wrong. I think we just need to have that kind of thing and we share. Mm-hmm. We are all in one. And I know the intricacies of that. So thank you very much. Then the possibility of engaging DHT with regards to the funding of the national application that I've talked about. This will ensure that we improve server reputation and as well as popularity and its impact on the citizens. Then we're also going to look at proper reporting model to determine major cost that we touch. You know, whether are we really overcharging or I think we have video, but this is, I'm not sure whether the video is okay, but
SAPO Automation Project was soon to launch the first release of the SAPO Authentication Services. The first release will enable our client to
thank you very much. This was inspired by honor of service. Thank you very much. So this is the project we thought that we should importantly highlight it to this committee because it is a good project, and I am happy to say that we are using an agile approach, and we are launching one module after the other, and the first module to ensure that we successfully launch this process. Chairperson and honorable members, I think this is my presentation, and we are quite grateful for the insights that have been given. And we are also going to have APIs that are going to link to the various platforms, for example, Department of Human Affairs, Salesforce, and so forth. And this is possible. We have seen that in the Kenyan system, they are already ahead in terms of that. And the blockchain is being handled with the highest priority given. Thank you very much, Chairperson and honorable members. This is my presentation. I'll give the Chairperson to give a closing remarks.
Thank you. What we have presented to you is not a strategic plan that we have constructed. We are only 2 years on the job, and you know how the cycles work of government, that the planning comes before you. So we are reporting on the strategy plan and its entities that have already been constructed by the board before. The second thing that I would like also to emphasize that has been said many times is about the fact that when we took over as a new board 2 years ago, we found an organization that was extremely disbalanced. We all have just altered out. The board was also so much confused about things that didn't so happen. There was no money in the organization, we couldn't pay staff, and we had to make a number of decisions quickly as to how we could keep the organization. There were oppositions, extreme and intensive oppositions to the retrenchment that we had to do. It was a painful period for staff, for the board, and for everybody around, and during the COVID time. We have managed over the 2 years to be able to stabilize this organization. We've got fewer people, and what you see now is kind of thinking of how we can work to get to a number of people. It's less, more than half of the people that have let go because we simply didn't have to be funded. But also the work that we've done was very very manual. It's now that we are able to assume, take a deep breath and think about what are we doing to get out of this organism. Some of you will probably have not been around all this whole organization we some of us, but we have. It was the very first organic act that was promulgated by the Department of Education, even before the school that was created. It was put in place by a young government with very little experience of government and also not being able to know how these things work, how they would be. And we think that at this particular moment, it is important that we pause, we go back, and look at what this organization is supposed to do, how it can be helpful in the South African people. We have got a number of documents that we can come to you and tell you that this policy that, this act that, this line that, and these are the arrows that go. If you want to do this, you can go to there. To be honest with you, very little of the association work is in the other way. We think it's a responsible thing to take a pause and review what the construct of this issue is. What are the design flaws that have been existing in this? How can we make it better? And it can be a useful tool for the South African education and training system. We also, in the act, have got roles that have been given, like we have to provide some oversight and professional bodies. It's becoming quite a difficult thing to do because we cannot still understand clearly why and how, who, what benefit does it mean. So this is the time that the year that we are going to do that. I'm personally very excited about that because I think only good things will come out of it. But it is also important that we do that because as we now proceed to our time for the strategic plan, we have enough resources, knowledge, and everything about how to improve the organization as it goes forward. We also have been blessed by cushioned by the extra resources that the old was talking, that we have been able to amount to the system. Since we have cut the organization, but the failures could be stuck, but they still are on that mill or third mill of doing all those things that need to be done by the 100 people who are no longer there. But the resources that have come out of this process have cushioned us that we can be able to do this and allow us to do this. And we also are grateful for the Department of Higher Education for supplementing our resources so that we can get into automation. Because as soon as we get into that way of doing things, we'll find that it's going to be cheaper to run the organization. We want to establish a knowledge-based organization. It cannot be that Sava is just something that interprets line after line of the head. A respected knowledge-based organization that is what depth, that when other people are looking at what we're doing, they will know that we are really making a difference in and we think that we are on our way into doing that. You will have to judge us with the strategic plan that will come at us. Thank you.
Thank you very much to colleagues from SACWA, the chairperson of the council. What was this word? Thank you. The board. The chairperson of the board, Prof. Luana, as well as the CEO, Ms. Nadia Starr, the CFO, as well as the manager responsible for strategy reporting and monitoring and evaluation. I want to take hands from members who would like to engage on the presentation, and then we'll go for a body break and get the responses from colleagues.
I also want to appreciate DG that you did send us the written responses from last week's engagement. I think all members would have received those responses that we received them yesterday. I think on my side, as I note, Honorable Nguyen, Hakao, Ngobo, King, Bia, Zondo, Mirabo, and I'll come back to Maganiso. I don't have many questions at this point. From the QCTO, maybe let me just appreciate, of course, as I said, the new board chair, and wish you all the best. Appreciate the work done by Ms. Antoni. Appreciate the remarks around funding. I think that's a general overarching crisis, DG. Could you detail from yourself in writing on what exactly it is that you need additional funding for? So that when we also articulate ourselves as, I believe, advocates for, or people who advocate on your behalf, we're also very clear on what it is that our entities want additional funding for. I mean, I can tell you now, there's no member of this committee who doesn't know that NASA's, I think we've moved a bit from the conversation of NASA's needing additional funding for tuition and for funding students, saying, well, maybe the reasons why you're not performing efficiently in terms of administering the funds for students is because you don't have a solid enough budget for your administration and your staff. So there's not member of this committee who doesn't know that NASA needs additional funding for its own administration, right? So we would like to be as clear when we speak about what additional funding SAQA and the QCTO need. I just want clarity as well. In terms of the 2020, the Vision 2020, there's that last step. Which my understanding is that we were not able to conclude it. Would that then be moved over, so that it carried on to the new plans of the QCTO? I think it's that step on the 2020-2021 onwards. So just to make one understand what then happens to that last phase. And then I really want to also welcome the revised OQFS and the reasoning behind it, particularly articulated on slide 26. We say it's implications of the revised OQFS, but implication sometimes sounds like it's a bad thing. I don't know if that's the term we should be using, CEO, I don't know, but impact, you know, maybe impact because it's exciting. It's what the committee has been advocating. And DG, it's really nice to call for something as a committee. I keep saying this. And then we start seeing it in how the department and its entities articulate itself. I mean, when you speak about promoting and contributing to a single national coordinator in QS, This word also coordination is coming across in so many ways. The department speaks about coordination in a high level, coordinating resources, but we talk about coordinating resources, it's about also coordinating ourselves and our efforts, right? And we're seeing it in all the entities and how they also communicate. And that is a good thing. This matter around elevating TVET colleges to become institutions of choice, that for me really makes one want to appreciate the revised OQSF. So we're not only saying we want to make them institutions of choice, but we're doing something actively. We're actively doing something to ensure that they become institutions of choice, to ensure that there's great articulation from one place to the other. And as we go further, I think there's also elaboration on the CEC system. And that's very important. I think things that, across party, honorable things, sometimes even this becomes a bit confusing what we're trying to do between the CET program and the TVET program.
and we're hoping that through these revised OQSS, there can be greater clarity in what programs do we want to achieve through the CET program, what is it going to achieve in the TVET program, where are the synergies. I mean, to an extent, you can even say between the TVET and the university program, there are times if you look at a University of Technology and a TVET college, there are times where you say, but these programs, why can't these only be offered by the universities and these will only be offered by the TVET colleges, and that goes for the CETs as well. So I think this call on the operational model to have stronger and more cooperative relationships between the CETs, yourself, and the TVET colleges and the CET colleges and the universities, and this greater synergy amongst the entire TVET system is important so that, we know exactly what we're doing with one program. And I think that the operational model and this revised OQSS maybe can really assist us in greater clarity in that regard. So I want to appreciate it even for what it needs to achieve, in terms of supporting the skilling of citizens of this country and ensuring that they can be self-liberated. And then I just want to understand what then becomes the relationship in terms of the revised OQSS with NASA funding. I'd like to understand how that relates and actually could we be assisted with some of the loopholes that we've been having between NASA's funding and how a particular country. On the OQSS. I really am appreciating terminology like relevant qualification. But I think for me, DG, this is the question I asked last week as well. Like, it needs to be clear what we're doing to ensure that we have relevant. Because society keeps saying our qualifications are not relevant, they're not responsive, they're not of quality. That's what citizens are saying. That's the narrative out there. The narrative of the South African education system is not responsive, we're wasting money, there's so much budget or funds that are allocated towards education, but our young people are unemployed, are they internationally competitive? It's the narrative. Whether or not it's true is another question. But then if in our planning, we're saying we want to work towards relevant qualifications that are responsive to labor, qualifications that have quality assurance, that needs to translate to the perceptions of society, but also the lived realities of our people. We find a situation where industry says these qualifications are not relevant, therefore we can't employ your students or your citizens, right? And that's why I also appreciate the fact that in your plans you speak to work with industry. And I think we can have, so I know from the application, has had a summit. It's more than a conference, the summit that where they have industry, even industry partnership format. Yeah. So we've done that. Now what's the follow-up? And what becomes the integration and the planning of of PTO in relation to, we had the conversation. We didn't have a conversation for nothing. There were resolutions that came out of this. How do we make sure that that the QCTO supports the resolution that would have come out of that summit? Because industry was there. We heard what industry had to say. If there wasn't enough industry in that room, how do we make sure that we have more spaces where we can engage with industry in a very concrete way? They must tell us what module do you think we should be actually putting in so that we can address this issue or this notion that there aren't relevant qualifications in our country. So I think for me that there are many entities that need to within the head that need to work together in a synergized way to overcome the concerns that society has on these matters. Slide 35 says that one of the risks to outcome two is the fact that the economic reconstruction and recovery skill strategy has not been approved by the minister. I hope I'm understanding it correctly. If I am understanding it correctly, could you kindly, and this perhaps goes to the department chief, how soon can this the strategy be approved, noting that, you know, the TCTO kind of faces it as a quite a central strategy in terms of many of the outcomes that they have outlined here. The TCTO speaks about slide 30, stronger and more cooperative relationships between TCTO and CETA. And then there's another slide where we speak about skills development providers being a risk, but you refer to private skills development providers being a risk to one of the outcomes. My understanding is that CETA would not be private, or the skills service provider, the skills development provider, by speakers, not private, because we are giving them those funds and not the public funds. But I have a huge problem, BG, with CETA chairs and CEO roles, who, when we ask on the relevance of the skills that citizens are being trained in, tell you that they are not responsible for training. They don't do, they are the sports. In an entire committee meeting, is that we don't don't train ourselves. Of course we know you don't train yourself. Of course we know that you give the funds to someone else to train. But you should be in control of what skills those people are training our citizens with using citizens. Skills that are not responsible to labor, skills that are not publicly assured, then you're wasting money. Those are the situations where we have a whole lot of people who are unemployed or the neighbor says they have news. So I want to appreciate, as part of your operational model, how you want to strengthen and have greater cooperative relations with speakers. But also then be taking into confidence on how does that look like? Is it a meeting? What is that? So that we know that there is actual programmatic work that is taking place in that regard. And so we also deal with this. I'm very worried that we're just pulling money, giving people money, MSF, we're just giving people money to hopefully be training citizens in responsive skills. Honorable Cecilia?
Thank you very much.
I think that is recommended. Our parents let's appreciate your project finish. We are firmly or towards the end of what we tell the post in that transition. Possibly the first one conference are about to enter the fifth industrial revolution, and we can't be left. I mean, every time we complain, the chair, how the curriculum we're teaching is required. But maybe that's not the problem. Maybe the problem is ourselves sitting in industry. We are using old methods, and I want to appreciate the efforts that SAPA has taken in moving digitally on evaluating some foreign, maybe every qualification will be done digitally. We want to appreciate that part. We hope that most of the work will not be given to consultants in that space. We need in-house help, and we really want to appreciate that part. But CFO, I don't think the project indeed was inspired by me. If it was, maybe it would have been called Project Nigeria, but Phoenix, I mean, I'm not even from Phoenix in Denver. So I doubt. But on a serious note, on your presentation, the slide 26 there, which we don't have, but the one of class, on the presentation we have, we did not have that part. And because this entity, SAPA DG, with this committee was committed to engaging with you guys, the department, funding there. And we know CTAB, we did not have this TV waiting for that graph, so you know it's extremely disadvantageous to speak about it. But at least the slide before does speak about the figures, and I want to speak to that slide. The CFO says they are not being audited. That the department must fund the education. So in this financial year, they would have lobbied you to give them about 10.5 million extra, so that they are they verify South African qualification for free. I don't know how I feel about it. I know that they have competition. They are not the only ones who want that. We have said it in this committee before that we believe that they should be the only ones in South Africa to deal with that. There's another company called MIT or something like that. MIT, that does the recruitment. How many people go to that space instead of us is the turnaround time, most of the time.
most of the time is what within a couple of days they will give you a response. And our turnaround time, I can't remember if it's only for foreign or for local, but you have a turnaround time of about 1 month or 3 weeks, I can't remember, 3 weeks, which is long if somebody wants to get into the employment state. So maybe the issue of funds may not be the reason, or may not be a solution to our problem. Maybe we must look at the turnaround, changing the turnaround time. And we can say, obviously, depending on the staff, I know that we have a shortage. We have to look good about 2 years ago, about 73 or something like that, staff members, because we could not afford. But I still believe, you know, we need a mentality shift. We need a culture shift. There's a problem with our public servant. There's a serious problem with our public servant. And sometimes it's not even an issue of staff complement in the past. Sometimes, you know, you go to a municipality to get proof of residence. And those people are on go slow forever. Or they just... And you know, it's not even those who've been there for too long or those who've been there recently. It just seems there's a culture there of post-law. Even in our public institutions, you go to Home Affairs. It's almost acceptable that you must be in a queue for a whole day. And if you are in a queue for... If you finish your issues at Home Affairs for 1 hour, people have to come out. So which one is best, you know? So there's a culture problem, and I think we must speak about it. You see, including here, NSFI, for example, we'll deal with them later on, but you get people who their appeals have not been addressed from last year. You ask yourself, Marie, what are we doing? You know, so there's a culture problem we must fire genius. You know, and I believe, CEO, some of these things, honestly speaking, see, I think if we are to be serious, you know, DG, first thing you can press a restart button to say, all of you who are employed here, who are re-employing you, but now you are going to sign performance contract. And this is how much you want to perform. So on a daily basis, once you know when you said you were at work, what is it that, you know, we came here last year, October, at NSFAS, and we said, we want to come to NSFAS and see when your employees are saying they are at work, what is it that they are doing? When you send them here in February and August, it has not been resolved.
Yeah.
So tell us, we want to come and sit with you and see when you say you are at work working, what are you doing? Mm-hmm. You know, so maybe even there, because if we are not generating enough,
I
mean, on the verification fee, we are only maybe generating 10 million. How many are we resolving a week? And how many are we resolving a day?
Yeah.
How many should we, based on our capacity, that, honestly speaking, how many can we verify a day? I know sometimes when you're dealing with foreign, you have to wait on them to come to you. But with us here, yeah, we should be dealing with things. So I think us trying to build the department to give us the sense might not even be the solution.
Okay.
Because, in fact, when we are the only ones operating on the system, our people might take 5 months to get a verification because they now know the staff we have afterward no BMI or whatever that thing is. You know, people can't go anywhere, but you know, with monopoly over. Maybe that might not, it might be good for an institution, but it might not just submit the system. be good for the citizens. And I think we must just say it, you know, for me, SAPA could be making more money. More money. Well, there's a serious potential for the gold mine or platinum mine. I don't know which one trades more than gold. I'm not one of them. But you are sitting on a diamond mine, which you guys are not utilizing. So I think about 2 years ago, I said, maybe can see that. Okay, we are in a, every week, people, I can't remember, I was reading a story recently where somebody resigned from work because they had applied based on false qualifications. So, you know, they said they had this qualification, and now that the company was verifying that person resigned and they had been there for some time. And I thought about what I said to Stark about 3 years ago. I said to you, and I want to repeat it again, and maybe I was not clear. And I think, and this is where I think SAPA could be all your problems, all your economic or financial problems could be resolved if you do this thing.
Why you go and trademark these ideas, so that
EMI or whoever don't do this. Because they can wake up tomorrow and go and do it. There will be nothing that stops them from doing it. Avoid this thing of people applying on false pretense or fake qualifications or whatever the case. One thing to think about this thing maybe with your technical people, but the idea I had was that you can go to all companies in the country and ask them to give you all the CVs of their employees. It would be a tedious work, unfortunately, but then you take, so you present to them that, look, to avoid this thing of people applying for this qualification, this experience, they went here and there. So once you take all the things that you have of your employees, they can just update them. And then you take them and you digitize, in a system on, you know, just like that thing of blockchain. And then when a company advertises and somebody applies, then that company will then get the CVs, the proper CVs from, so they'll buy it from you. So you can say, because this one would have verified the experience indeed, you know, they want you to see. You would have verified their qualification that they have. So you have a database of plus minus 10 million people, I'm making an example, or 15 million people with verified CVs. In a blockchain arrangement, so no one can enter there and change the CV or alter the CV or say when they were not employed for 2 years and say, no, I was working as a contract manager and my uncle's cut from it. So they can't lie on when they apply elsewhere. So this company, in for them to verify, so they just buy the CV of this person from you. Obviously, you have to to change the POPI Act to now pass and the new border. But I believe that many companies would be willing to buy stuff like that, because it's one, it will save them time for, you know, to go around taking references that are there or not. You know, it is my view that might work for yourselves. You know, I spent more time on it, because maybe that time I just, you know, spoke about it and not elaborate on it. But you can maybe go and look around it and check if it's possible or not. But I believe that if we can look into that, you know, if you have 10, 15 million CVs, then, you know, selling a CV for 100 rand, for an example, then it helps your verification, covers your verification fees there. The one, the 15.5 million you'll get in 25, 26, you might get it in 23, 24, in my view. But obviously, don't take my word for it. Look into it. I think we can go far with that part. And then it is on goods and services, on your budget on goods and services. This year you have projected to spend almost about 37 million on goods and services. Maybe explain what is it that we'll be doing this year? What are those goods and services that will cost us about that much? But other than that, I think for staff and cabinet chair, I will just go quickly to QCTO. Let's also welcome the presentation. QCTO chair spoke about this point earlier on, and I think I want to speak about it as well. The MQF Act 2008 repositioned QCTO as a quality council responsible for the development and management of OQSS. And the revised OQSS says that according to yourself, one CVS would be institutions of choice. Now, let's go to the other point is that you are overseeing the latest report, part qualification, the N4206, along with the reconstruction of those qualifications. What do you believe that this curriculum that is being taught at our children is aligned to industry and the economy now and in the future? They were asking this because Chad spoke about it, that everywhere you go, you know, like MTS, everywhere you go, people say, you know, sometimes you use it politically, you know, when we're in the house, funding, wrong costs, you know. So we're asking this question because even where we come from in our constituency, our people also keep saying this thing that we are funding low-end courses where a person gets qualifications from it but can't be employed anyway. Do you believe that is the case? We're asking you this one because this one is in your mandate. This one is yours. And what is it that QCTO is doing now to develop curriculum that is in that economy adaptation for today? What is it that you are doing now? And thirdly, let's say there are no problems. Let's say you don't have a problem of staff. You don't have a problem of budget. If the president could say to you now, let's fix the curriculum of TV. What, and he says there's an open check. You can hire as many people as you want. So let's say you don't have any problem of, because I don't want when you answer and say, no, shortage of staff. So let's say you don't have that problem. What kind of program would you suggest it should be a backbone to bring in a curriculum that is industry and economy aligned for today and for the future? So this first question is a hypothetical question. So if you don't have any problem over and above the one that you have. And lastly, if you were to have that hypothetical situation, how long would you think it would take for us to develop this curriculum that we believe is industry and economy? I hope I would have been clear then, but congratulations, Chairperson of QCTO. We wish you all the best. As you can see, none of us are overdue, and the committee is a very helpful sometimes we are this nice, sometimes we are not, depending on the weather. we're a little bit smiling. Next time it might not be the case. The former CEO of the one before Dr. Lent knows that very well. He visited our offices in Cape Town, wanted to leave early, and the committee refused. But before they refused, they went very hard on him. And then after that meeting, he resigned. So I'm just saying, you know. Thank you very much, Jay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, the truth is there's only three of us under 32 to the chief. I don't know what you're talking about here. But thank you for the presentations, and good morning, Philippe, all of you and all your protocol listeners. I'm not going to do the official reach of the chair and the all, but thank you again for being here today. So I only have four questions. The first has to do with the QCTO. I think the House is in agreement that ours remains one, right, which is the creation of a workforce that is skilled and capable. However, in order for us to get there, obviously we need to ensure that what is proposed in terms of the list of programs that are offering are relevant for that. I think Honorable Vizier touched a bit on those, but just the two specifications that I want to hear on you is, and these two requests I would like to have in writing, please. So one is, what are the list of your proposed new occupational skills programs in TVIS and CETs in particular? So what can we have that list? Secondly, the identifications made for the redesign of the TVIS curriculum, those specifications, want to know. And I'm asking this because I'm hoping to see mechatronics there involved. I think anybody who's been here, thank you, DG, would know I'm very, very passionate about this because it's very important. Because the most heartbreaking thing that could happen to a person is to go to a rural private college and to get there and to know that institution is the only home for the students that are enrolled there. And to hear that the operator of that particular program say that they have to jump out of their own self to find inspiration on how to ensure that the offering that they're giving to the enrolled students is up to scratch. Because outside of their own innovative thinking and efforts, in status quo or what is prescribed doesn't work. So it's very important for us to get those redesigned lists as well as the proposed
occupational skills program, particularly for students. And then for the South African Qualification Authority, I believe my colleagues will touch on quite a lot of things, but I just have two. The one again, DG, I did mention in the previous meeting that we had that I was going to bring this up, so I'm hoping you've had a chat with your team around the SIE TVET college scandal that has pretty much been slipped under the carpet. And if you guys don't, I don't know if that faces us, what exactly is it that I'm referring to about the SIED, or I'm not sure what that face means, but pretty much there are a whole lot of human beings and entities involved, departments and offices involved in the investigation of what's going on at SIED. And part of the human beings that are involved are staff, and whether you are aware, whether you've done these investigations, to no avail. It's a question mark, do you really fall, do you know the truth, what's going on? And so I would like you to have an opportunity to bring this committee to confidence on your participation with what's going on in SIED, just to make sure that tomorrow when I'm not accusing you of things that you would have had an opportunity to just clarify today. So, and I'm not going to brief you because, I mean, I did mention to DG, so I'm assuming DG wants you to brief. Secondly, what I would like to know is on the your recruitment, the recruitment, so there was an indication that there's a gap that exists within the institution because of the loss that the institution has. So where are you on that recruitment? Are you filling the gap? How fast are you? Is there an appetite? Is there not? That's just what I want to know. But the rest, I think, yeah, that's the decision. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning to all colleagues. I just have a four questions to QCTO, and I'll start on two for SACRA. I'll start with QCTO. And I just want to understand or find out if the QCTO has applied to Treasury for rollover, the approval of the rollover fund, and if yes, how much are the rollover funds? And the second question, under program 3, which deals with occupational qualification quality assurance, you indicated that you have revised the 5 indicators there, so just want to know what informed the revision of these indicators. And then the questions for third part, the first one is with the challenge which you have noted, which is the financial constraint. And I just want to understand that with the limited budget, for how long do you think SACRA can operate as a viable entity? And the last question is also on the freeze on filling of non-essential services which you have imposed due to financial constraints. And I just want to understand, so on the non-essential vacancies, and I just want to understand which of them is supposed to be frozen, and for how long is it supposed to be frozen, and what is the impact of this have on the government of South Africa.
Thank you. Okay, good morning, everyone. Also from my side, I welcome both presentations. So I'm going to ask, sometimes my questions will be to both SACRA and QCTO. When it comes to the National Qualifications Amendment Act, that has still not been promulgated, SACRA did indicate that will have an impact on the function. Can you just elaborate both entities? Should this actually be promulgated? Because we know it was promulgated, not really promulgated, but there was already a second one coming. How is that actually going to impact both the institutions? Because I'm very mindful that we're operating on the NQS Act, which is still outdated, and we're aligning our everything according to the outdated one. How will it have a bearing
trust any globalization action speculator. I'm just concerned because it's since 2019 that this is coming on. I must say to the QCCO, I'm really impressed when you were talking about your centralized qualification system. I do believe that it should actually be centralized with yourself, because we are facing a situation where we find students in the occupational side who actually, when it comes to getting recognition for the certification or just to authorize it, it doesn't even take 3 months, and software indicates in their case. In your case, it actually takes over 18 months. Because we have some who actually, that I had to deal with SACWA previously, where a gentleman waited 18 months just to get his qualifications, which hindered him from employability in the long term. So that is, I just like to know your time frame now, when you revise this, what is it now going to be to make sure that the certificate is recognized or otherwise. Chair, I echo the sentiment when you said that the revised OQ-SF, it's very progressive. But I must say, when they talked about the colleges being the center, we're still sitting with a draft policy on higher education institutional labs. And when I read through your strategic plan, it was actually put in so nice with their draft policy. Because we've made recommendations where TVET colleges should actually now be considered part of as university colleges, where some of the other programs should actually then be shifted to the CET sector, you know, just to have like the streamlining of the TVET sector and to attract more people. So I must agree, it actually lines in very well with that, and it then also works well on your rationalization of your occupational qualification, which will streamline it. But I am though mindful that on slide 35 for program 2, your risk sector was that you were concerned of the TVET, CETs and universities, both public and private. They don't necessarily have the capacity to offer occupational qualifications, and they do not offer qualifications or part qualifications or skills programs which are in high demand. And that boils down to what Honorable Lethea was mentioning, where people then ask, how do you align the qualifications with the skills that are in high demand or with the critical skills list? So I would just like to find out from your side what your involvement would have been in order to ensure that you have input on the alignment of curricula to the colleges, and also your suggestions you should probably have made to the minister in order to ensure that the curricula and program actually mostly as aligned to qualifications in high demand, because I'm mindful sometimes you see CET colleges and they offer skill like hairdressing. And how many opportunities are there for hairdressers nowadays? Whereas if you have shown them chemical preparation on hair products, that is a different goal than what I'm saying. I saw of your spending patterns, and I'm mindful that you're spending all your funds that you are going to receive. You did mention reserves. I would have loved to have seen how much your reserves are in order to ensure going forward you can be sustainable. You spoke about that you would be looking for your property to purchase. Have you considered the value of the bond you are looking at? And have you considered over how many years you'd like to pay that off, as well as the interest rate you are mindful to look at over the years that you are going to come off the bond, just to make sure that you are in that range that used to be self-fundable and then not be bogged down with a bond fee. Okay, then I'm going over to SACWA.
So most of my questions actually have been covered by the honorable before me. So I basically, when it comes to SAPWA, I'm very much pleased to see that there is great progress being made in terms of the organization that you spoke about, because I remember last year you were very much concerned of the legacy projects that you still need to onboard. So I'm very, really, really interested. Well, that was going to be my first question. I didn't go on your presentation. But I must be honest, I am a bit concerned when it comes to accreditation of product qualifications and the linkage with higher education institutions, sometimes with yourself. Because yesterday we did a nice oversight at the University of Korea, and what everyone saw was it's in the news of Professor Ejeoma's qualification and how that was not picked up by SAPWA to even see if these foreign qualifications was even of relevance. So I'm just mindful of the procedure that goes into ensuring that foreign qualifications are thoroughly evaluated, and even when it reaches the university stages, it's re-evaluated again through SAPWA. Other than that, I have actually no questions for you guys. Okay.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and let me also, for the sake of time, just observe all possible and thank everyone for being here. Thank you. Just going to go straight to the QCTO. And the first question is, are there any technical vacancies that you have not got within QCTO? I'm also concerned that you've mentioned that there's a limited budget of a particular program, but on the same token, you have a rollover of surplus funds. Now, firstly, how much is that and why? And can you not then do work transfer instead of requesting for that surplus to be rolled over, to be able to use it in the underfunded program that you clearly have budgetary constraints on, and then you're able to deliver? You also spoke about the Vision 2020, and we are 3 years after that. And the question is, have you achieved this goal, or have you changed or amended it, perhaps extended your vision goals, clearly because you are past 2020? And I know this because cities have these visions, and then you find that it's not achieved. But before you get to that, you have changed it. I'm seeing that we still see 2020 and 2023. So clearly you can't be having that vision when it's past. So you have to be looking at the future. There was another concern I have, and that is I tried to log into your website, particularly because I'm new to this committee and I needed to understand some stuff. But when I tried to log on, it says that you suspended the use of qualifications development facilities, QDFs. And I'm just interested to know why is this, and what is the procedure or the new process that you are following since you have suspended the use of this. And then the last question for QCTO is, have you conducted an audit of institutions that are implementing occupational qualifications? And if you have, what have you established in order to assist you with future plans? Then for SAPWA, yeah, it's quite evident that you do have critical vacancies. And I've seen many positions in your critical vacancies that are not filled. And this hampers service delivery. And the question is, what is the time frame for you to be able to fill those critical vacancies? The other one is in respect of, has SAPWA considered a partnership link or working relationship or even perhaps MOA, MOU, or MOA with the Department of Home Affairs, particularly around accreditation of foreign national that would require to come into the country for a specific skill that they bring. And one of the requirements that DHA has is that you have to go through the SAFQUA accreditation. And I must tell you that it's quite a daunting and serious task. And it brings me to the point of where you are saying that you are reliant on revenue, but at the same time you are not, your turnaround to do this accreditation, to be able to provide information, or to even allow for that person to come to the country, get hampered because you have not provided the necessary. And yet you are reliant on that international revenue. So clearly there is a vacuum. And even your turnaround in terms of that is quite challenging. And perhaps you need to be able to think clearly whether you have access to DHA or DHA has access to your system to be able to then fast-track that process. And then you find that SAFQUA and MQF has very limited awareness information in the public domain. What is the plan to put it out there so that the ordinary people who may not have previously known that they can be able to actually get the experience and the learning that they've done accredited, and they don't, to be honest. What is the plan for you to be able to do that? Thank you.
Thank you. Greetings to everyone. Thanks for all the presentations. My first question is there any long-term sustainable plan to retain the skills and capacity within the entity? And the other one, what mitigation strategies would potentially be to mitigate the adverse impact? PCTO, what support is the PCTO providing the action what partnerships is the PCTO having with the energy and water sector? The other one, and is there any relationship between the PCTO and the basic education space within the context of technical and schools?
Thanks,
Mom.
Thank you.
I would say that I thought of it, but it's like I asked the question because you cannot, and I think it's the discussion between.
Sorry, on the way, I'll click again. Remember, okay, click here. So when we have speakers on this side of the room, we should use that device. When you have speakers on this side of the room, you should use CFO's device. Okay, continue on with it.
Thank you, Chair. So the conversation I'm having is in relation to the challenge we so often speak about, the fact that we want to make vocational training an apex priority in order to make sure that we produce as many qualified artisans as possible, or those who would have taken the vocational route as opposed to those who take the traditional route of getting qualifications. And I think that should reflect in the amount of money that would be put into a heavy PR exercise, because consistently we get this sense that young people feel as if vocational qualifications are the stepchild of the PTS sector, and that those who fall into that space would have not qualified to make it into the traditional university space, and it is a natural deterrent to those who would qualify to move into that space, who have the aptitude, by the way, to make it as top-class students. And so we need to rebrand that space. It is very, very important that we create a narrative. And I'll give a typical example. I think a country like Germany has been able to master that science and balance the arts and the science. That the vocational space, and we usually, in colloquial terms, we usually say that people who are left handed in townships, we say, no, you're a German, you know? And we say that because we refer to their potential artisanal capabilities. And it's nuanced. It's a nuanced reference to their potential artisanal capabilities on the fact that they are left-handed. And whether that is real or imagined is not the point. The point is that when you articulate German in the same sentence as vocational and artisanal capability, there's no question. We have failed to take that space and elevate it so that a learner who's in matric does not think of going to a TVET college as a senzamin learning zotinishan. They feel that it's a perfect place to go to. They don't even think twice about having to compare it with a University of Westfront or University of Victoria. We need to push a rebranding campaign. You can't win the battle, PG, of getting the vocational space, have the numbers we want, by being a pedestrian with the budget around marketing and communication. You can't be pedestrian about it. In as much as one the actual paradigm of those who are in school, that the vocational route is as credible as going to a university of technology or a traditional university. But you need to push in the funds into that space to get it to a point where young people believe it. And they actually want to go and move into that space. And I'm just saying, I would want to see those numbers as part of just disaggregating the figure. For us, how much are you pushing into spending for that exercise? And what people fail to understand is that
communication does not exist for its own sake. There is a reason why blue chip companies spend big budgets for communication. It's actually what drives the numbers. Their bottom line is driven by people who are stuck to the brand. They are loyal to the brand, but it does not start with loyalty. It is generated through this thing called communication. And it's a science we need to master in government, because I see that we usually treat it as a by the way.
So
one of the biggest failures that I hear on the daily is how the GCIS is failing to maximize on government communication. That makes the ordinary South African understand that we are a government that works. Just bang. The failure to articulate the message consistently that we are a government that works. As far as people are concerned, they don't even know that there are three levels to this government, that you have two elections within a midterm period apart from each other, which are totally different from each other. People don't know those simple things. You speak to a 25-year-old, you ask them, do you know that there's a municipality, there's provincial government, then there's national government? No, we don't. So I'm just making the point, DG, and chair of the QCTO. We need to see numbers being put into making sure that the output we want to see in terms of the input of learners going into the vocational space is driven through money being put to bring them in through proper communication. And I have not seen that on the budget presented to us from the QCTO. And I just wanted to focus on that part. The second thing is the time it takes for a learner to exit, qualify, graduate, and actually get the actual certificate. I think we should be shown what is put into making sure that time is reduced. Because it's one thing to learn, qualify, and not have the actual paper that will allow you to enter into spaces that will get you active in earning the rent that you would have learned to earn. And when you have a turnaround time that is not practicable for a learner to be absorbed into the workspace, it becomes a lost opportunity, and sometimes even frustrating for these learners. That how bad I went to school, I studied, and now I'm supposed to go to finalize my schooling in the workspace, but I don't have the requisite paperwork to say that I've done the theoretical part, and even after having completed the two components combined, waiting for a certificate, so I'm now NQF level 6, or I'm now NQF level 5, the waiting period just is too long. And I think we have done a bit of work to cut down on the backlog. But we need to make sure that in real time, when we modernize this system, the QCTO also needs to go into modernizing its system such that a learner is able to get their qualification certificate in real time and not have to wait a long period of time before they get it. I want to also speak to a trend, and I want to speak to both the QCTO chair and Saka. My pedantic brain, every time someone says Sakwa, it goes into a spasm. So I'm trying to locate the U or the W between the Q and the A, and I can't find it. So I've been going through a lot of mental spasms the whole time. Everyone and everybody keeps saying Sakwa. Just on the light hand. But yes. I want to raise a question of governance. And you know, we never had to touch on governance, because I think we look at it as if it's a strategic level driver of the organization, but we almost look at it as a soft skill. and look at the soft skills because of how these boards are put together and packaged behind the scenes. And I will not even put that on the table, that discussion. But you find that the professors find themselves with a VC in a university went to recently said, you know, the council that leads the institution is composed of people who don't even have entry have level 7. I'm an N2F 10, and I'm led by these people. And these people have never even ran a successful enterprise. Now already they see themselves as a boss to an N2F level 10, who is a professor. They push you around because it's prestigious for them to be sitting here. They got in other methods and ways. And it makes it very difficult to have a professional relationship with these people that advances the strategic objectives, vision, and goals of this thing. Because people are just here for other things. They are not here for the strategic level mandates that a board is supposed to execute. Some of them, you even wonder, are they daily operational workers? Why are they always here? And these are conversations you must start having about one board cohesion and the focus on the task at hand. How is the board functioning? Who monitors the performance of these board cohesion? Because half the time we literally catch the dysfunction of this board. Must have tried scandal somewhere at a pain or there's a place that is doing the rounds because some journalists would have picked up that there is an ongoing battle between board members. How is the general health of the QCTO and SACAB boards? How are the relations there between? We saw that movie recently, DGM Chair, in UCT, where the VC and the chair of the council, it looked like a Clint Eastwood movie. Those who would have had the benefit of watching Western movies, for some of us who were old enough to remember, it looked like a Clint Eastwood movie, where both players have to walk 25 paces and the quickest draw lives. And these boards have become platforms. Thank you, my friend. This board has become platforms of adversarial relations other than being focused on the job. So there are those who want to demonstrate how powerful they are. There are those who and progress falls. So every time we get the presentation on how far the organization moves in achieving APP, the story that's not told is the story behind the scenes, which happens at the board level. Things stalled there, decisions are stalled there, projects are not approved there, especially boards where projects have to go to the board for approval before implementation. How many projects are stalled? In fact, we should have a dashboard. Did you? I would like to propose that we get a dashboard every time these institutions, organs of state, parastatal, wherever it is, that they should demonstrate to us that the amount of time it takes for decisions to be made and implemented. And we should be shown where the decisions stand. So if it's at the bottom level, we should be shown that this decision was taken, installed this law, or it was fast-tracked in this fashion. And if it's done at the executive level, we should see that. That part of the reporting template should involve such graphic detail so that we are able to appreciate who the problem is actually in these institutions, in these organizations, where the decision is made, how long it takes for it to hit the ground. I said, if we are able to have a graphic presentation of that loop, it will tell us where we should drop the bottlenecks. And I can say, without the fear of contradiction, DG, we are a different cause. We are very decisive. We will lobby the minister. Don't have a problem. When we identify that the loop, the blockages are individual and not process, we don't have a problem. So that we get progress. But you are able then to identify whether the challenges are process or individual. When you have this dashboard presented, you are able to identify, I'm at decisions. Because would either implemented, inking the process, then you clean process. But when you have the blockages being inspired by Isandla Semfe, then see under the Semfe, Kahle, and we deal with the Semfe. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Yabo. Honorable Zonda said he covered Honorable Ananisha.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Let me start by welcoming both presentations, and I think one must acknowledge the fact that at least there is sense that Ministerial Summit 2022 was not just a ticking box, because when you hear this presentation, it's about the evolution of the group that particular summit. And DG, I must say that, at times, we normally say that we must not face the fish for swimming. However, I think it is a good call that we need to show, because we believe that this is the only sector that speaks about issues of 35 and above and 35 below. Other sectors, their focus is 18 to 35 sectors. And I want to really appreciate the work that has been done in terms of making sure, as Chair said, the issue of terminology that has been put. I mean, as a young person, actually not young, but relatively young, it is pleasing that when you see a person presenting, and this is the content that has been brought by us at the portfolio committee. So, as members of parliament and public servants, it's an aha moment where we cannot just leave it hanging there for now, but the regular exam. I think let us appreciate the work done by TCO and making sure that they put our content as we want. I mean, we are the cohort that always speak about making sure that we train people not for the street, and as well we make pivots and institutions of choice. So when you see that, Honorable Kacha, at least one can tell that some of you have got a sense in terms of what it will talk about people's awareness and people. I think in what you are saying, I need to train a person to be employed and train a person to be a job creator. That's what we need as South Africans. And we really need that, what you have said. On other issues of the budget, Chair, I think your sentiment has covered it to say, what is it that is enough? What is it that you need us to do as members of parliament? And we are ready, as Honorable Leavo is saying, that we can lobby and advocate for your issues. DG, I think as well, one can tell without fear or favor, or not being safe, to say, most of the time when we see your entities, there's too much color, and I believe that we need to make sure that you become biased in terms of changing the color. We want to see those that you can smell the same with them and speak with them to say, man, this is what you need to do. Yeah, without being biased. I think it is important that we raise this issue in this particular platform to say, all of you are in sector moving forward. Make sure that you can replace a woman with a maid. A man with a name. It cannot happen unless we don't understand transformational agenda.
So it is important that we make sure that when we do vacancy filling, we are able to bring those who are seen as marginalized or vulnerable to the system. And one would want to say, Chairperson, if you are a South African, you can trace that previously it was about exclusion. Then we moved from there to separation. Then now we're speaking integration and inclusion, and all your presentation, they speak all what we want to hear as participants and as community members. I must say the issue of just increasing level one so we do accept occupation. It shows that you already understand that not all of us can start somewhere, level three and stuff. So you're bringing everybody along. You're carrying the sentiments of the president that let us not leave people behind. So you really understand that in South Africa you cannot just start for level three. At least there are those that you can carry through who level one. So we be really pleased about what we are seeing today, and it's pleased with the light at the end of the tunnel. I hope that all of us here have noted what has happened in Parliament on the 2nd of May, where we have actually affirmed a language, the official language. I hope that as this particular team, we'll be able to say when we do vacation posts, whether it's through internship, learnership, or any form of opportunity, you include people with sign language. But we need as a department, this is a department that's actually knowledge production of the country, so there's no need that you would get Department of Health or Social Media with particular process. So it is important when you deal with your opportunities now, you must put that aside of those who are deaf, of those who cannot see. I'm happy about the electricity or phonics video space. At least, even we have someone who was, you know, disadvantage in terms of the ability to speak, but that's what you have to get here. So the sense that we just inclusion, the integration. So it is important that we really appreciate such things when we see them. But Chairperson, moreover, in terms of all the presentations, we hear the issue of budget. However, one thing is that if you properly coordinate from planning to implementation, issues of budget won't be your recurring issue that we lack this, we lack that, and so on. Because of all of you who feel using or to have to feel where the other one is lacking. So it is important that the issue are all, you must all learn to work together as an entity or as a department. It is important with regards to dealing to issues of limited budget. And I want to ask QCT or with regards to their presentation on SLA refund. How many teachers have signed the SLAs and how many are pending, and what is the plan with regards to that? On the issue of vacancy, we can uncover, we can no longer come and ask timelessly that when are you able to fill this particular vacancy. So our issue in this particular PC is to say that no critical vacancies must be filled, whether from Zakala or anything. Because I don't think that we don't want to be seated here and think, oh, there are maybe a certain person who speaks also 8 years and what that person of interest. That is why it can't close. But it is important to take the organization forward gradually. You must ensure that those critical positions are being filled, and we will no longer ask the question when, how, and so forth. Chair, with the issue of the National Learner's Record Database by CCTO, I think we just need to acknowledge that process. I'm not sure whether I think we need to acknowledge that we can at least having this data. People are tired of full of applications. People to know how many have been taken from the new profile. Young forever, 10
very high that you talk budget to build, because of you're doing something that has been done by a sister department. So let's focus on ensuring that, that we optimally use the presidential court and in terms of filling in on what reasons that we need to get. From a youth development point of view, I think this is something that is good. Don't call for people to apply, but go to the presidential website and then use that particular data to ensure that you deal with the issue of unemployment and poverty. I think the slide 36 has been covered by Honorable Lydia and yourself, Jefferson. We acknowledge the work that has been done also in that particular act. And lastly, Chairperson, I think we must acknowledge the hour about, you know, the picture earlier when it's so nice and their dedication. If you can take them and take this particular team, you'd see where you are. Yeah, the stand in terms of gender agenda and transformation. So if you just look at SAPA and ourselves, then you would know what you need in terms of being a person. I think, in conclusion, Chairperson, we must commend the thinking of the CFO WhatsApp. You say, as an organization, they want to operate like a commercial organization. I mean, that's what we need in a public institution that wants to speak about business and I hope. Isn't it, you think as a public entity, why are we not? And there's corruption, there's lots of work. So it is important that most of you, you can just, you know, check in best practices. Where over the whole of us are the commercial organization. Where you can get somebody to say that this is the view that you want to take and so, with that being said, I think it is important that someone submit a program of action in detail that takes us through in terms of how are they going to ensure that they meet those targets, 6% that they didn't meet, and as well, those that are on track. Yeah, and you want to tell us, we are a committee that says that we don't want on track. We don't want on track. We want we are told that this is the end of the road. We are able to say, yeah. At least you are deployed properly, and this is what we say that you have achieved. So can we get that program of action? And as well to CTO, if you have implementation plan that you have with regards to your APCs, send it to us with specific indicators, related or time frame or targets that are specific. So actually forward it to us, Chair. Let us finally agree that Nick is doing what he's supposed to be doing as a leader in this particular thing, on the basis that he is able to speak to church, I think, to ensure that you do what is good for you as organizations that are actually performing well, and we acknowledge the outcomes of the AG, and we hope that you will maintain the standard of going up beyond what you have achieved.
Thank you very much, Honourable Manenisa. Thank you very much to all Honourable Members for your comments, questions and recommendations. I think by and large members have really appreciated the work that's been done by both entities. They have appreciated areas where their thoughts have been affirmed, their vision has been affirmed, and of course there are those clarities. Also recommendations on how we can strengthen the work that both entities have to do. I want to ask that colleagues respond to us in writing by Friday. I know that the tight deadline, you would have had to respond now. If you think of it that way, think a little bit brighter. The pressure for Friday is because we need to put together a report that will be part of the budget of the debate, of course, then we present that to the House. So we are also under time constraint. So if by Friday can be a complete response, also because, you know, I think there's been an affirmation of what, of your plan. I think more than anything, members have affirmed your plan, members have elaborated and reported on the importance of the success of those plans, and how you can strengthen those plans. So the condition is clarify us where we needed the clarity, where we need perhaps, we, of course there is the six documents of your full-out plans and budget, and we do try our best to get as much as we can, to read as much as we can from those six documents, but sometimes the presentation leaves out what may be covered in the bigger documents that some members maybe we may not have been able to get through all of it. So we know that some of the answers may be in the bigger APP. I also would like to encourage members to please read through the responses that we've received from the department already. And DG, I must say that colleagues from the secretariat and the research unit have appreciated the manner in which you responded to last week's question. So, you know, if there's a way of just supporting the entities as they respond to make sure that we continue in terms of the quality of responses we receive from the department. I'd like to also ask that both entities just indicate to us how your engagement with the AG went. You know, if the AG felt that your plans and your budgeting follow the SMART principle and so forth, and what was just the engagement you had with the AG. Yeah, with that being said, I'd like to afford both chair an opportunity just 5 minutes. Anything you would like to say before we let you go. But then the responses will come from yourself by Friday in the future.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. Just about the clarity, on the POA which is a deadline, you remember when you talked about...
We can give you 2 weeks.
Okay. So that's the first thing. And then the other thing is around, remember talking about the governance? I think just for our site quickly, there's no overreach that is still.
So the turnaround time are quite maintained. So all the members of council have their own responsibilities, so there's no overlap. So I just want to put that on record. And then I think the rest I'm covered, but I wanted to just verify the issue of overreach, because members will see when you presented a dashboard what was presented to the ESCO, what are the issues that were discussed, and what are the timelines or turnaround time in terms of approval until it gets council. So that is a system that is there, and
the chairboss used up all 5 minutes, so if there's anything you'd like to say before you leave, I'll afford you that opportunity.
No, thank you, Chair. I mean, the technology that we're moving in the direction as expected by a political is not necessary for me to be your requirement, it is the requirements of the people.
So,
Chair, I just want to ask, would it be fine, the response, if we group the test and the uses quite a bit of overlaps. But Chair, I just want to give thanks to the committee for the support. We come here, we go back motivated, and I think that's what makes me get up in the morning to get back to work. So except I have an additional task for the day. Thank you very much to you, Chair, and to the members.
Thank you very much to all colleagues. Thank you, Chair. The Deputy Chair, CEO, CFO, thank you so much. I'd like to then hand over to Patella.
I also would...
Tourism Commission and the community observe that when we don't appoint ourselves, we get surprised when we are asked to serve on this position. However, even when you get asked, you find people of all different nations and colors, and you have to fight through the whole of the functionality and making the board fit what it needs to be. But I think when the community should really take a role, 4 to 5 years after the term of the church, you should be making an assessment of where is that organization is at, what is the developmental trajectory that organization is doing. And with that in mind, therefore, it should be your advice to government as to what kind of board government airport would depending, because we interact with the portfolio committee frequently, more frequently than government. We don't. We send them the APP, we send them whatever. We don't ever. I'm going to talk to the DG now because I've been trying to talk to him. And I put urgent, please see me. I see him. So we don't interact with government. So I think you must make that assessment of where, what kind of board would serve this organization better. And I'm hoping that they will hear that, because it depends on the board, the chamber of the board, and the leadership of the chair, whether or not you are going to develop certain competencies in the organization and lead in that, whether or not you are going to, which trajectory are you taking this organization. It is important that you have a board which has the capability of doing that. That must add value. We should not be policing agents, but we must add value for what is being done. I'm hoping I didn't take my 5 minutes so that she will answer.
Thank you, Chair. I am here to use much more discretion than our chairperson. She's earned the right to be very blunt. From my side, I want to certainly share the things, the generosity of the portfolio committee and some very constructive conversations. Often you come here feeling apprehensive about, the challenges identified. I mean, one is able to really have a conversation with constructive and progressive comments. I think, as my colleague says, we go away energized. I want to appreciate that. I also want to appreciate some of the acknowledgements of the work and the progress that SACWA has already made in terms of transformation processes, etc. And I think, as my parting shot, I'd like to just indicate that one of my personal priorities is to get the staff, the culture and the development of the staff at SACWA right. We've gone through an incredibly difficult time, but we are a knowledge organization for a knowledge entity, and we can only progress our agenda with the right people. So we're building culture, we're building succession, we're building those critical spaces so that we're able to, take some of these things internally and not constantly be looking outside. But I want to appreciate the comments, and we'll certainly also comply with the responses. Thank you.
Thank you very much to Prof. Lulana, the Chair, and the CEO, Ms. Nadia Staff. CFO, thank you to you too. Ms. Matau, responsible for strategy, reporting, and monitoring and evaluation. Thank you so much. I want to ask, done a horrible error. Honorable Bush's time was up initially, and it has gone down. Honorable Bush, if you can hear me, please do indicate.
Thank you. No, I'm covered. I removed my hand because of that.
the responses by Friday close of business. And then I forgot to say this, but I really think the suggestion was coming from the CFO of SACWA on the shared spaces. Not a bad idea. It speaks to DG, the top themes of your performance plans, when you say we must coordinate the resources that we have. I don't think it's a bad idea. I think if we could create spaces where we know that this is DTech up. Yes, we know the department is in space towards CSIR. I don't know how many cases in and around there, you know, where we just know that this is the hub, this is the precinct, this is the, you know, I think it's not a bad idea. It's your colleague. Yeah, but I don't think it's a bad idea, and I also appreciate that type of thinking. That says, let's share the resources that we have, because they're not a lot. So I want to just thank you, colleagues, really. I don't know if Poplolana is the department or I like how you said it, government. If government will take the suggestions of the committee, in terms of a composition. So, but I just, you know, I think we do need to work towards a ministry that is not averse to the views of the stakeholders. It's open to getting the suggestions from its stakeholders. I think we need to move towards that. Thank you so much, colleagues. We'd like to take a body break.
Yes.
And so, okay, DG, I think I'm not going to talk to you. I think I allow you to close first. But we're going to take a body break. I think by 12:15, DG would be done. So I think we can take about a 10-minute body break. And then if we could just indicate to the CEO and the chair of NASPA that they can start change. I've seen them, they've been on the platform the whole time, but we can just indicate to them that they can start getting close up. But let me then hand over to DG just to make his point
of view.
Yeah, good.
Thank you very much, Chair. I'm certainly not going to take too much of your time. Maybe this intervention will have some time to hold the first, from CCO, there was a question around the strategy, economic recovery and reconstruction skills strategy. That has been signed and that has been finalized and handed back to CCO. I think we must make that a trial. Secondly, Chair, I've got my checklist of what has not been done, what has been done, what has not been well done, so forth. There are five key outputs for not only the two entities, but for the department as well, to do that inform everything as we've been speaking. I will mention three because two of them are about the guidelines provision for open learning and the policy brief on e-learning, which I mean require a different conversation. But the first three are the ensuring that the National Qualifications Framework Amendment is submitted to Parliament and approved. This one is responsibility not whether I'm not on a place of the two entities. A particular staff, I think the department must take responsibility for this one because it's already with the president. So I think I can't take the president's time. The department will take a lot of what is not being finalized and utilize our own channels to get it done. And I think honorable thing. Did raise a question around this. The second one is the
submission to the minister, the tourism brief on articulation to Tibet and university. This, I think, Dr. Sotsego, if I'm correct, you've already received comments, including the Gazette revision for recognition of parliamentary coordination bodies. All of those have already been done, and we've received public comments on them. I think the rest of other matters, they will be presented and responded to in writing to you, Chair, and we will also share our response to the portfolio committee with the SACO, so that our responses are coordinated and well acknowledged. We take this opportunity to thank all the members of the portfolio committee for the wisdom and insight and guidance that we always have. So, thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Kristin. Thank you very much, Kristin. Okay, SACO, it's so cool. Honorable Melanie, yeah, this one is for you, aligned to you. And then he says to Honorable Melanie, what? So that's totally really cool. I think all members have already said that on my behalf, but I must say it's also that it's what we want to see this one, so that it's sensible. It's just a breath of fresh air. So DJ, I think you're doing a great job in terms of leading this collective. There's a lot that is going to be a fresh air. With that being said, it's quite a pause on the dot. We can go far. But if I salute from the two entities, you're more than welcome to go. And if you want to stay, you can stay. But you can, we are a thank you so much.
What time of the day?
Thank you,
I think